This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm David Brancaccio. It's 1964 when the Surgeon General of the United States, Dr. Luther Terry, makes the health case that smoking kills. That in itself does not change the culture. Smoking goes down for a bit that year, but edges back up in 1965 once the headlines go away. University of Virginia history professor Sarah Mylove has a new book out called Cigarettes, A Political History, that explores the fascinating coalition of forces that led us to the smoke-free workplaces and public places of today. The anti-smoking movement leveraged public policy, a business case, science, the law, and fought local, including a woman in College Park, Maryland, who started a group out of her home called GASP, the Group Against Smoking Pollution. Mylove shares just a few of these stories with us.
GASP began when a woman named Clara Gowan, who lived in College Park, Maryland, got together with some of her girlfriends and thought, we do not smoke ourselves, but we leave out ashtrays in our home. So together, we are going to remove ashtrays from our home. Clara and the other women who launched GASP knew that they'd be violating a social norm. Maybe they'd be seen as bad hostesses. Maybe they'd be seen as needlessly confrontational. They had to shore up support among each other. And to do so, they founded a group and they spread news of their group using the mailing list of the Lung Association. And within a year, they sent over 500 new chapter kits to groups all around the country.
There's a New Jersey woman who worked for the telephone company who fought the company for the right to work in a smoke-free environment. She was particularly allergic to cigarette smoke. Donna Shemp, was it?
In 1975, Donna Shemp was a customer service representative at New Jersey Bell, which was the forerunner to what is now Verizon. And she had a tobacco allergy, a very severe one. She worked in a very smoky office. She actually resorted to wearing a gas mask, can you believe it, as a customer service representative. And the company doctor ordered her to stay home until her managers found a more hospitable place for her to work. Now, she probably thought she'd be home for just a couple of days, but days turned into weeks, which must have been a sign to her that New Jersey Bell was not going to cooperate with her doctor's orders or make life very easy for her.
She wins her case ultimately. Now, given the cultural change, regulatory change, legal change in the last 30 years, some smokers these days feel shunned, ostracized. Do you think that was an unintended consequence? Or to some extent, was this a strategy to recast smokers as outside the norm?
I think it was both. So you look at somebody like Donna Shemp, who after she won her case, she went back to work. And after she basically launched an after-hours consultancy and offered her services as a consultant to big businesses to construct smoking restrictions at work. And part of the argument she made and management found persuasive was essentially that smokers were expensive workers, that they took too many breaks, that they were costly to insure, that they got sick a lot. And so it was part of the strategy of the non-smokers' rights movement at work, the business case against smoking.
Trying to measure the externalities, measure the effects and costs of smoking in a more holistic way to help make the argument.
And that was powerful, particularly in the 1980s, as American businesses were trying to hone their international competitiveness. So it was a strategic argument, but it was also an argument born of a particular era.
Are there lessons here for other social movements like the fight to quell climate change or the fight to make workplaces safe from predatory bosses and coworkers?
Yeah, I mean, most Americans think that regulation ought to come from the federal government. But for most of the 20th century, the federal government was regulating on behalf of tobacco and in many ways against consumer protection from tobacco. And so the key insight of the non-smokers' rights movement was to find regulatory solutions at the local level. You need only think about non-smoking rooms offered in hotels. That was the direct result of the non-smokers' rights movement operating not through Congress or through regulatory agencies, but through local governments and in some cases through private businesses making their demands known.
University of Virginia history professor Sarah Mylove is author of the new book, The Cigarette, A Political History. Dr. Mylove, thank you.
Thank you so much.